What is up, podcast? Thank you again for tuning in. I started the Rocked Iron MMA podcast to bring voices on fight talk and life motivation from all around the world straight to the podcast. I hope you enjoy this listen. Let's go! And we are in. It's only right that we've got Imran back on the podcast. How are you doing, Imran?
Hey, we're good, baby.
He's back, he's back. And we're back from Rock Titan with another podcast, UFC 245 recap in the house. What a card it was. Imran, how did you feel about the card, man?
It was a great way to probably end the year that UFC have had. As you probably heard Dana saying, they've broken so many records. And what an amazing fight. What an amazing card. What amazing competitors it's been happening.
It was a great card full of great fights. Want to see a few more knockouts than we did. But
yeah,
saying that, it was a great card.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only been 48 hours, and we're going to go flying straight in to the main event cards. The first one was Jan versus Uriah Faber. Yeah. What a fight that was, man. this was a TKO, so we got to see a technical knockout early on. Jan, absolutely, this guy is the real deal, man. What he did to, you know, who someone will be a UFC Hall of Famer, the amount of fights that he has. Uriah Faber's had a great career. What he did to Uriah Faber was absolutely devastating. Give me your thoughts on that fight, man.
With a big bad Russian, Peter Yan. Amazing fight. I think Uriah Faber. You can see the age sort of get to him, but the heart that he showed in that fight.
40 years of age
is serious. It's no joke. You know, like,
I hope. I'm in that kind of shape where I'm 40 years of age, man.
He looked great. He looked ripped. He had loads of energy. He was quick. Like, I remember watching, like, I thought, for his age, Uriah Faber is so quick, the way he's moving. Like, it's almost like a spider, the way he was, like, the way his joints and stuff were moving so quickly. It was amazing to see. And, you know, this
quarters, man, you know, moving his arms, like, about.
Exactly, yeah, it's like, it's incredible. His hand speed's still great for a 40-year-old. And yeah, you gotta understand, this man does not owe this sport anything, in the sense that he didn't have to do this. Like, he's not chasing the money or whatever. This guy purely did it because he wanted to get himself back in the game, pure love. And it's amazing to see, like, you know, he'll go down as a Hall of Famer, and he put up such a great fight. But I think Peter Yan, you know, he just kept knocking him down, and Uriah Faber did great to get back up. I think it was great that the ref had to call it as a TKO. Like, you know, Uriah Faber was trying, but Peter Yan ultimately, you know, that bare age.
It was in round two with the left. It was a left jab and the right hook that caused the damage. You know, that was the first round of the fight, the one that Yan gave out, and then in round three, he was controlling the clinch. And that, you know, devastating left kick to the side of Uriah Faber's head. He's in the final round that just knocked him down, man.
Oh my gosh, it was incredible. Man,
straight in, you saw his face. He couldn't. Uriah Faber had no complaints there. He would have, if the referee let that carry on, he would have been pounding him to the head, and he would have been worse for him. But Jan is a serious contender for the title now.
That's right. Yeah, like, even you saw Faber with a massive bulge on the corner of his eye. That's it, and that was very early in the round, and I thought, that's it. It's probably the doctor's gonna have a look at it. They're gonna call it. But surprisingly, they continued. But it just shows you, like, the quality of Peter Yan. Like, he showed a technical skill in that fight.
I'm a fan now. I'm a fan, and he would have taken.
Oh yeah, 100%.
One thing he said is, I hope, he was speaking in Russian at the end, I hope you know a lot of Uriah's fans will be a fan of me now, and he 100% will have a lot of fans going onto his side.
Like, You definitely seen his quality. And you know these Russian built, even like, you know, these ex-USSR fighters from these countries, man, they're like, they're a different kettle of fish. They're a different breed. You just, they ooze like fearlessness, and you really, it's incredible.
Right. Well, that was a great fight, and it carried on in the card. Moraes versus Jose Aldo, and he looked great at this weight. Can I say I think he's right at home in this weight. It's a weight where Moraes was hitting him with some, you know, crazy shots, but this guy, much, you know, heavier hitters. For a majority of the fight, he was the one applying the pressure. He was moving forward to Moraes. He was moving, cutting the ring off. He was applying incredible amounts of pressure. And until I recapped the fight afterwards properly and done analysis, I generally thought that Jose Aldo won that fight. But before I say what my decision is now, I want you to say what your thoughts were on the fight.
I stand on the side of Aldo. I think he did win the fight. But he had a lot of doubts going into this. A lot of people said for him to drop from, you know, lightweight down to bantamweight, it's going to be detrimental to him. And see the effects of it. Even I looked at him on the weigh-in, I was like, oh my God, like, I did not recognize Aldo. It did not look like him.
A lot of weight cut,
like, but from what I've heard, he's done it in a very smart way where he's gradually lost weight as opposed to trying, you know, do a camp and then like drastically, you know, do a weight cut. I think that's what paid off for him in the end. Like, due to his gradual sort of weight loss, he sort of translated that power he had in the lightweight division and brought it down to bantamweight, and you can see, like, he held his own. It's incredible. Like, it looked in his element, and to keep up with, you know, Moraes is younger than him as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Like, you got Aldo at 33 years of age, but his striking was great.
Been around for a long time, Jose Aldo. What he's achieved in the division, been for a long time as well.
Like, the likes of fighters he's faced, and they've called him, like, you know, arguably also one of the greatest fighters in the lightweight division. You know, Moraes, I don't think he went in thinking he's going to have an easy fight. I think Aldo believes in himself, and it translated in that fight. Like, he did such a good job, and I going blows for blows throughout the rounds, but for me personally, I think Aldo.
How many rounds, so out of the three rounds, how many rounds do you give Aldo, and how many rounds do you give Moraes?
I think early rounds, I'd probably give it to Moraes. I feel like Aldo sort of came out to his element in the later rounds. It was three rounds? Yeah, three rounds. I would give probably the first to Moraes, second to Aldo. Third one was probably a bit harder to decide, but I think because Moraes probably landed more significant blows.
That's what it looked like. It was basically because of the punch output. Now, Aldo had a lot more punch output, but looking at significant strikes, in the first round, Moraes has a 42% significant strike percentage, where Aldo has a 37%. In the second one, you're right to give it to Aldo. Aldo has a 50% significant strike percentage, with Moraes having 38%. And has 48% percentage, while Aldo has 29% in the last round. So that's, Aldo has a much more higher punch output and striking output.
Yeah. But
Moraes, who has the more significant strike. So I think that's what the judges saw. And that's what it gave to Moraes. Obviously, the more punches, more significant strikes that are landing on Aldo. And that's what I saw, I think. So in the end, when I did the analysis, I gave it 2-1 to Moraes.
Right. Yeah, I guess the stats don't lie, don't they? You know, of course, there's a reason why the judges gave it to
Moraes. I guess the time to see the rematch.
Again.
I'll be more than happy as a fan to see the rematch between these two.
You reckon?
Yeah.
I don't think
what would happen the second time around.
I don't think it warrants, for me personally, I don't think it warrants a rematch. It wasn't enough of a big controversial decision for me to say, oh, I want the rematch. I think what's next, Aldo? I think Moraes is on a high. He's beaten her, you know, what's going to be another future Hall of Famer. What's next for him? Like, does he challenge Cejudo for the bantamweight? You know, where do you go from here? Apparently, that's right.
It's the money fight right now in that.
What would you rather see? Would you rather see Moraes versus Cejudo, or would you rather see Aldo, you know, come into the bantamweight and 100%? And Cejudo won that fight as well. You know, apparently the first thing he did was he texted Dana and said, let's do it. Let's get that fight with Aldo. Yeah, and I think Aldo, Dana's a smart businessman. He knows Aldo versus Cejudo will probably sell more tickets than Moraes versus Cejudo.
That's a co-main event at the least.
100%. If anything, the headline event is Cejudo still holding two titles, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, strawweight and bantamweight. So it'd be interesting, you know.
That was a great fight. After analysis, you know, that those are thoughts on it. Looking forward to see where these two fighters go next. Both great fighters. Now, moving on, we had, you know, Amanda Nunes versus Germaine the Iran Nami. Now, this was a very, very interesting
fight indeed.
The first time in a while, in a very long time, Amanda Nunes was taken right to five rounds.
I know, right?
There was quite a lot of frustrating things for me from this fight as well, for both fighters. First of all, why wasn't Germaine the Iran Nami taking Nunes into the middle of the octagon more on their feet?
Yeah.
And why was Nunes entertaining those up kicks when Germaine the Iran Nami was on her feet? Because Germaine the Iran Nami hit her twice with those up kicks off her back.
Yeah.
The first thing you should do is go in with your hips. But for skills fighters, Nunes, it was surprising me. But anyway, those were the frustrating things for me. If I was Germaine the Iran Nami now, why would you entertain Amanda Nunes? Every time Amanda Nunes took her to the ground, it was game over, pretty much. She kept her on the ground. Crazy ground and pound this woman has, Amanda Nunes.
She
absolutely crash out of her. Germaine the Iran Nami had a chance of getting the armbar. Other than that, it was just Amanda Nunes was killing her on the ground.
It was literally a lamb to the slaughterhouse. As soon as Nunes had Randami on the ground, every single round I was lost. Like, oh, for God's sake! Like, if anything, Randami needs to go back. I think I need to work on my defensive takedowns. She was not dropping her hits as Nunes was going to grab, you know, doing the grappling on her. Every round, she just got taken to the ground, and it just opened up Nunes to do her ground and pound. You know, fair play to Randami. She held up her own. There's a lot of moments where I thought she's about to tap, or she's about to call it. But she did something that hasn't been done in a while, which was she wore out Nunes, and can see that by how Nunes was just stagnant on top of Randami at times, and the ref, you know, there was that one occasion where he had to stop it and get them to stand up because they weren't doing anything on the floor.
Yeah.
And then he was about to call it the second time, but then of course I think Nunes sort of came to her senses and started punching her on the ground.
I think Nunes knew if she was on her feet, there's a chance that Germaine Randami can actually win this fight. But on the ground, as you said, there was that chance of a guillotine. In the first round, and Nunes had the arm triangle that Germaine the Iran Nami somehow got out of.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah.
air, like I think there was that one as well where they were in a grapple, and then suddenly randomly sort of almost turns it into a triangle, and yeah. I was like, oh my god, this could change everything. But then of course Nunes gets up and we're back to Nunes being on top. Like, if you looked at the statistics, right, on every single round, Nunes was on top of Randamie for more than 2 minutes. The highest amount Randamie got, the most amount of seconds Randamie got on Nunes was about 13, 14 seconds. It just to show you she was being absolutely dominated. Regardless of the fact that she held up her own, that was pure domination and class by Nunes. Like, if anything, I'm surprised it did not end in a TKO. I think Randamie got very lucky. Nunes got tired. She couldn't execute that strong ground and pound game. But end of the day, you know, you went five rounds with arguably the greatest woman fighter that ever did.
There was that, but she genuinely didn't make it easier for herself in Jermaine Randamie. Even in the fourth round, when she nearly had that armbar, as soon as Nunes gets out of it and she starts getting to her feet, why don't you just go to the center of the octagon? Why don't you just tell her, come, let's go? But instead, she stays, you know, on the ground with her, and then what does Nunes do? Takes her back to the ground. And
she's got long legs. Use them legs to kick at Nunes' hips, push her off you, but she wasn't doing that. She was just standing on the floor, trying her luck and trying to, you know, do them kicks on the ground. And I guess one connected. I'm sure you've seen the one where it's connected and then...
Yeah, it did hurt.
It rocked her. So I guess there was...
There were questions going into this. Like, did Jermaine Randamie improve her ground game? I think the answer to that question is pretty much a
hell no. It's a hell no.
Absolutely. No. Literally a hell no.
It's a hell no.
It's definitely a hell no. But you know, just quickly to finish that fight off, Nunes looked vulnerable every single time on the feet against her. She's obviously a really good striker. I mean, her kickboxing record career is incredible. Significant strikes from the clinch. She had 12, while Amanda Nunes had 2. So that just shows, you know, in close quarters, how a devastating striker she is. But look, Amanda Nunes, the reason why she's champion, and she got 5 rounds out, and you know she's going to keep bossing the division. I don't think this woman can lose.
Has it possibly revealed, you know, a chink in the armor? Would other people turn around and say, like, if we can survive against Nunes for, I guess, more than 2 rounds,
if they'll have to wear her out. As good as a striker as Jermaine Randamie, right? That's the only way.
Someone that has randomly sort of strike game but isn't equally as matched as Nunes in, you know, grappling, wrestling, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's just forming the perfect fighter now, though, isn't it?
Right, exactly. Yeah, so it's exciting to see what comes next.
Yeah, but regardless, great fight, and the champion keeps moving on. And the next fight, we go to the co-main event: Holloway versus Alexander the Great Volkanovski. I love saying this guy's name, man. Alexander the Great Volkanovski. But what a great fight this was! And you know, I can't even say this was an upset. I can't even say as great Holloway is, great as a, you know, he's a legend in the game and in this division, a great champion. I'm not even gonna disrespect Volkanovski and say he's an upset. This guy pretty much won the fight clearly.
100%. And I called it on the last one, and I had a feeling, that Volkanovski is something about him. He just has the right character to be the next champion. I just felt it. It felt right, and I think he came at a good time. I think Holloway was not prepared for what Volkanovski was bringing. Volkanovski had a great game plan going in, and I don't know, did Holloway get complacent at being, you know, always being called the greatest featherweight of all time. Do you get complacent? Yeah, what do you think? Like, do you think that was Holloway at his best, or do you think, or do you think Volkanovski's game plan was just too great for Holloway?
I think the latter. I think the way Volkanovski controlled the fight is with those leg kicks, the left leg, devastating left kick, puts his head down and starts swinging. Right, that's what I did for a lot of the fight. The way he closed the distance, how the power of this guy, you know, the amount of power this guy's got in his legs. I think the way he controlled the fight from that standpoint, it was a perfect game plan. It was only, I think, late into the third round and the fourth, that Holloway, you know, realized, you know, okay, he puts his head down quite a lot. Let me try and get uppercut in, and that's when he changed his stance to try and give himself a chance. But up until then, it was. I think he was too late, man.
That's it. Like, I think Holloway was expecting Volkanovski to sort of like be so adamant with the leg kicks. I think before he realized it, he realized my leg's hurting too much. He hasn't got that maneuverability anymore. And that just, you know, when you looked at Volkanovski's legs compared to Holloway's, like, you can see that past of his translating to those big chunky legs. And imagine receiving one of those devastating kicks constantly. You know, every time Holloway was swinging, Volkanovski was sort of dropping his head, made Holloway think he's swinging straight hit to the back. And eventually Holloway were wearing out. You know, it could have been, you know, of course he went for the uppercut. And then you got to, like, he had to change his stance as well, because if he kept putting that leg out, you know, Volkanovski would have destroyed it. He had to change up his stance, use a fresh leg ahead. And then that, obviously, the power isn't, you know, you're on a weaker stance now. You can't use your stronger arm striking.
No.
You all of a sudden have to change your tactics within the fight. And I think Volkanovski, you know, exploited that tactic, his own tact, so well.
This fight was definitely the battle of the strikes. 606 strikes thrown.
Wow.
Fighters with Volkanovski hitting 157 of his 303, and Holloway hitting 134 out of his 303. So it was definitely the battle of the strikes, but with Volkanovski landing the more significant strikes, it was a great fight either way. And again, another division going forward, looking forward to see, you know, what kind of fights will be made at that division. But yeah, that was a great fight. You know, I'm looking forward to see, you know, who Volkanovski fights next. Again, it's another great division for the UFC. And moving on to the main event, Kamaru Usman versus Covington. Imran, I'm gonna let you start this one, man. What did you think?
What an incredible 100%. Fight. You got two wrestlers, right? One was I think everyone was expecting a wrestling match between two, you know, state champions in their respective fields. But what we got was something completely different. We were expecting a wrestling match. But what we got was an absolute slugfest between two possibly... You know, they were perfectly evenly matched, have the exact same fight record, and I didn't expect that. I did not expect that fight to go the way it did, in terms of the result, but in terms of how it all played out. We had five rounds of two guys just brutally going for blood. They were eyeing like dogs in that fight. It was amazing.
I think Dana said it perfectly. How many grudge matches can you remember where both fighters did not like each other, ending up in a good fight? Pretty much all of them. You know, the last one I can remember where two guys completely hated each other was Khabib versus Conor McGregor, and we all know what happened there. Khabib just kept around for the whole five rounds. These guys, two elite wrestlers, right? Two guys, you know, you do not want to wrestle against, you know. Stay on their feet and absolutely blast the crap out of each other for a whole five rounds. And you know what? both of them, you know, held their own in there, man. There were some devastating, devastating punches. I think what won Usman the fight in the end, because I think the judges going into the fifth round had it as a draw. So it would have been interesting to see what would have what the judges would have given if it went to the went to a decision. But that that straight, you know, the right hand that actually did fracture Covington's jaw is what I think gave it into Usman's favor, because when that straight hand landed in the fifth round, late into the fifth round, I think the damage to the jaw is what caused Covington to get knocked down.
That fifth round was it was a good thing, you know, Mark Goddard stopped the fight. I think, like, Covington held up amazingly. Like, as much as we dislike this guy, he is a brawler. He is a fighter. He can fight. Like, let's not take that away from him. Regardless of him being, like, a little bitch afterwards and, you know, throwing his toys at the pram, this guy can fight. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he's back challenging for the title again. But I think it was a great decision by Goddard. And I think I love the call that Goddard made.
I don't see what he had to complain about. He had his head covered. Usman was pounding him. He wasn't showing any signs that you know, he could, you know, fight. So if you put yourself in that position, if you're not giving the referee any sort of you know, hint that, you know, you can carry, you can fight.
Yeah.
How can you blame the referee? I mean, he tweeted, he was slating Mark Goddard on Twitter, but that's my boy, man. He can't.
He was
a great Baron. Goddard does actually coach there sometimes. So, but it's not just that. You know, he's one of the best in the game. And he rarely makes a bad decision when it comes to, you know, referee, which is why he's held so highly by the UFC and the fight world. Yeah. So I don't see why he was
playing. The reason why they got out to officiate this, every decision from the eye poke,
the kick where Usman said hit his cup was a bit questionable. Yeah. It seemed that like was, it was just. But look, you know, if the fighter's saying they hit the cup, I think as a referee, if you're in that position, you got to kind of give a draw to the fight. Oh, well, stop the fight for the time being.
Yeah, the VAR in UFC.
There is no VAR.
I'm saying, like, the ref makes a call of what he possibly saw and what, you know, what Kumaru had confirmed by saying, "Oh, it was a kick to the cup." And I'm sure wasn't there another stoppage in there somewhere?
No, it was just it was the eye poke, and it was the you know, supposed kick to the cup.
Right. Yeah. I think the incident I'm talking about is where Covington had got punched so clearly to the chin. I think that's the one that broke his jaw.
That's the one that fractured his jaw.
And that's the one where he tried saying he poked me in the eye. I was like, "What are you talking about?"
I think he just did that.
He got punched so hard, I didn't realize where he had got punched. Oh my God, in my eye.
Isn't it ironic that, you know, during the weigh-in, when they faced off, Covington clearly said to Kamaru Usman he's going to put him into hospital, that it was actually Covington that actually had to get taken to hospital to get his jaw wired shut.
That's right. It's like, the thing is, no one knew Covington's jaw was broken. The only people that knew were the people that were watching it live, right? Because we had a glimpse at the camera was
open. Now, let me tell you something. The last thing you want to do when you've got a straight right hand coming towards you is have your mouth open, man, because you're just asking for your jaw to...
I felt bad for COVID. I just thought, even after he was like, "I got a broken jaw," I just thought, Kumaro's just going to carry on aiming for that jaw, and he did. And I thought, oh, like, I can't imagine we see Covington's jaw come up his hinges and he's just left on the with his tongue hanging out. You know, thank God it didn't get to that day.
Crazy as well.
My goodness, though, what it was a slugfest. But what I picked up on was, right, I like COVID's corner. I don't know if you noticed it, right, but as soon as he says my jaw's broken, his corner his coach is the same coach as Nunes, right? He wasn't giving him any tactical advice. All he was just saying was, he goes, we must break his will, you know, we'll break his will. I was like, what's going on? Like, there's no tactical advice on here. Like, I think it's
I get you. But you know, the coach knows Covington the most out of any fan watching. I would like to think the coach was telling him exactly what Covington needed to hear at that point. Because the fight was still very close at that point.
As my coach, right, you give me some tactical information like, okay, look, he's dropping his line, blah, blah, blah. Go around, hit him on the side. No, if you came to me and said, we must break his will, I don't know what the fuck you mean. I've been punched a couple of times, my jaw's broken. Give me some tactical advice. You know, he said that twice while he was in his corner. He all kept saying was, we must break his will. There was, oh my gosh, I just thought it was hilarious. I didn't just think he was odd. I don't think his corner sort of, I don't think his corner believed in him. I don't think his corner was prepared for. They probably expected
the game. But the thing is, right, what he was doing up until then, the fight was a draw. What he was doing was well. Sorry?
Yeah, so then it was up to that point, it was definitely a draw.
It was
certainly, like, the only thing that made the decision was the TKO. Otherwise, if it had ended without
TKO, there was literally a minute left till the fight ended, man. And I was even thinking, he needs to get a TKO here or a KO. And when he'd done that straight right hand and Covington went to the ground, I literally jumped up and I was like, this is it. He needs to capitalize now. And thankfully he did, man.
He did, certainly. I think eventually it caught up to Covington. And that jaw was just... like, he's got... you know, both of these guys have incredibly strong jaws. Like, they were taking a lot of shots. But I think eventually Covington just had to... like, that jaw was not going to hold up anymore. It had to put him down on his ass. But the amazing thing was, right, there was no takedown. There was no attempt at any takedowns. There was no grappling. There was no wrestling. It was pure slugging. It was a pure slugfest of, you know, trying to beat each other.
I'd like to get one of their insights as to why that wasn't. I mean, they both respect each other's ground game so much.
Yeah.
You know what? I want to keep it on the feet. Did someone tell them, look, guys, let's keep this fight on the feet, man. We want to see you guys beat the crap out of each other, and I'll pay you more. Like, you know, I want to know what was the reasoning behind that. But look, overall, UFC 245 was an incredible card, a great way for the UFC to finish the year. And we're going into 2020 now, more big fights announced. Again, like we said before, we've got Conor McGregor and Cerrone headlining the show. We've had, you know, in February, we've got John Jones versus Reyes, the undefeated fighter, 14. Another, that's going to be an incredible striking. It's going to be a striking madness. I can't wait for that fight.
Yeah, I need to see another Jones fight, guys.
He's definitely special. And then I think it's in April, we've got Khabib Nurmagomedov, who many say is the best in the UFC right now, and the best in the world.
probably the GOAT of UFC.
Tony Ferguson, a devastating striker who say if anyone is to beat Khabib Nurmagomedov, it's going to be Tony Ferguson. This fight is fourth or fifth time in the making. As a fight fan, you just look at these fights and you think 2020 is already crazy.
Exactly.
And well, look,
the question is, how can they have the bar next? You know what I want to see next year? This is my one fight for the wish list next year, right? I want to see a DC versus Brock Lesnar heavyweight fight next year.
Who say that again?
I want to see a DC versus Brock Lesnar fight next year.
Daniel Cormier versus Brock Lesnar. That's a fan favorite fight, isn't it? And look, but the thing is, anyone can make fights that the fans want to see is Dana White, which is why the UFC is where it's at right now.
That's where it's at. It's an interesting combat we're going to get out there. Boxers, you know, switch the channel, switch to UFC. The greatest combat sport is, right?
I definitely agree. But Imran, again, I wanna thank you again for coming on this UFC 245 recap podcast. It was only right to have you on here after the day you did for UFC 245 preview.
Pleasure.
Yeah, wrapping up this podcast now. The guys that are listening, you know, this podcast is for the fans and to get your voice onto the Rock Titan MMA podcast. So hit me up on our Instagram at Rock Titan, RockTitan, or on Twitter at RockTitan2. We want to have your voice on here. Again, it's been a great podcast. Guys, enjoy the rest of your day and the rest of the week.